What's standing between you and your first sale on Shopify? Time, expertise, resources? What if you could multiply all three? Product descriptions? Done. Store insights? Delivered. 2 a.m. customer questions? Handled instantly. Entrepreneurs on Shopify are reaching their first sale faster with AI that works with you. Go to shopify.com/firstsale to see how entrepreneurs use AI to grow their businesses faster. That's shopify.com/firstsale.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. It prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/listen. That's forhers.com/listen. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Meet Musings podcast. That's the show where we raise awareness about disabilities and everyday issues that affect mental health. And today's episode, I'm joined by a guest who is a speech and language pathologist who works with children, and she works with children in their early years. So she's named Janine, and we'll just get the ball rolling, let her talk about herself a bit and tell us how she got into this and everything really. So welcome to the Meet Musings, Janine.
Hi, thank you for having me here today. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. So I'm really intrigued. I know this is, speech and language therapist and being a pathologist and you work with children. But how did you even into this? What was the motivation that made you go into this field? It's an interesting field, you know?
Yes, it is. It is. And when I was younger, I didn't even know about it. But when I was 8 years old, my grandfather was sick. He had lung cancer, ended up passing away. Oh. And I remember at the time feeling very helpless. You know, you're 8 years old and you have this wonderful man who you look up to and you couldn't help them very much. And it really sparked this need and want to help people. And growing up, I thought, you know, I wanted to help people by being a teacher. And then when I was in high school, I played sports and I learned about physical therapy. And I thought maybe that was a good way to go because that could have been somebody that could have helped my grandfather. And I knew at the time you needed a master's degree to be a physical therapist. So I was going to get my bachelor's degree in something else that I love. I love English and literature and everything. So I got my bachelor's in English literature and a minor in creative writing. And when it was time to apply to grad school, it felt like everybody was going to go to physical therapy school. And someone had mentioned speech therapy because I had done competitive speech in high school and college as a performing arts. So I had looked into it, and my University of Hawaii at Manoa, back home where I'm from, had it as a program. And at the time, they were short speech therapists. So they were actually offering stipends to go to grad school as long as you worked for them for a few years afterwards. So it was almost like grad school was paid for.
Yeah.
That's such a bonus, right? Because I didn't leave grad school with like hundreds of thousands of dollars in debt. And I'm really glad I went into speech therapy because, you know, I've been doing it for over 20 years now. And I've worked with children through adult age. And I love all populations so much. And I really have a, you know, desire to promote early language development because I think that's really a key area that's lacking right now.
Thank you so much. I know I'm really sorry about your grandfather, you said. Of course, I know everybody has to die. But sometimes when you're still young and somebody that you look up to dies, it affects you in a very personal way that you don't even know how to explain. You can't express yourself at that age, saying, oh, I miss my grandfather. Sometimes the memories that you even shared fades away over time. So it's a personal thing, and actually happy that you took from that experience to go into something that is relevant, because right now in the UK, speech and language therapy, it is estimated that over 109 million children are lagging behind in their ability to talk. And there are proposals that there's going to be support to families of children with this particular speech impairment. But why do you think so many children need speech therapy these days?
Absolutely. There are way too many children that need early intervention speech therapy. And although there are children with disabilities that are born with Down syndrome or autism or some other thing that they are born with or have some kind of trauma early in life, there are so many children who are normal developing that need speech therapy because their parents just weren't educated enough, I think, on how to use strategies and how to promote language. And as parents and caregivers, you know, I have a son. I was guilty of this early on too. It was like over anticipating all of his needs because we want to prove that we're good parents and caregivers. So we want to show that, oh, we know when they want to eat. We know that they're wet. We know that they need this toy or that toy. And we know that they want this blanket or whatever we think that they need. But in actuality, by just completely doing everything for them, they are not learning how to communicate themselves. And so what I really push is for parents to know what the child needs, because you do need to be aware, right? But also let the child have that opportunity to practice their communication, whether it be through crying when they're little or vocalizing or gesturing and indicating that they need or want something. And eventually that communication will foster into words and be a confident communicator as they grow up.
That's amazing, really. I mean, you talked about parents recognizing when a child needs something. There are some children that actually cry all the time, and there are children that wouldn't even vocalize what they want. How can parents recognize when their children actually have a speech delay, or how can they actually recognize what their child needs if they don't have all these skills at hand already?
Yeah. So, you know, a child is going to be crying and vocalizing as they're a baby, right? When they cannot, you know, crawl or sit by themselves. But you would expect them to start to babble and create these vocalizations with intonation similar to adult speech as they get a little bit older, 6, 9 months. Definitely by 1 year, you want them to say their first word. So if they're not babbling by 9 months with this intonation that mimics adults, then you really have to look at, is their hearing okay? You know, maybe they're not hearing, or maybe they're not being interacted with enough, you know, because our communication is a back and forth thing. So if we are communicating with them and playing with them and giving them great eye contact, that's important for them to know that there is a communicative partner that they can interact with. They're not saying their first word by 1 year. That's a big red flag, right? So around 1 year. And then by 1.5 years, they should be accumulating a lot of single words. And by 2 years, you would expect them to be combining those two words together. And by 3 years, you know, they should have at least 3 to 5 words row in a sentence to communicate or ask questions. So those are some of the milestones that parents need to look out for.
Yes, thank you for talking about those milestones. Sometimes when a child doesn't talk, it might not be because they can't actually, sometimes it's just because they can't actually verbalize. And sometimes it's because of the way that parents monocoddle the children, doing everything for them, like you rightly pointed out before. I read about a research recently, I think it was a Science Advances journal, that pointed out that there is a particular gene is present in the brains of male versus female children, and that the amount that is present in the gene actually offers an explanation as to why there are more male autistic children than female, and that gene is called UBE3A gene. When I read about that, I was astounded because I know there are, the numbers of male versus female children that now have autism spectrum is just astonishing. So I wonder how does all this science and all this help us, all this research help us to move forward, to be able to help children in their speech and language defects?
Yeah, definitely science would be helpful, right? If we could kind of imagine like which children might be more predisposed to autism or something like that, right? But I think a greater education overall and to parents and caregivers and educators on how to use strategies for language would be a great approach to help to mitigate any delay that we see in language teaching, language development for children, because these strategies can be used with all children, right? Any child, whether they have a disability or not, any child would benefit from these strategies.
So how can you differentiate between a child that is autistic and a child that has speech and language delay?
So the characteristics of a child with autism, they have a checklist that they go by, right? Yeah. And oftentimes they are reluctant to identify a child with autism under the age of 2, maybe sometimes even under the age of 3 sometimes. So children are less likely to be diagnosed with autism before the age of 2, definitely. So when you approach a child, you may see signs, like you may see the repetition of a behavior. You may see the tantrums, you may see the fleeting eye contact, you may see the gibberish babbling that doesn't seem to follow any kind of adult pattern of speech. And those are things that you, as a speech therapist, might recognize, but you cannot independently identify somebody as someone with autism. They do need to have a psychologist that needs to evaluate them, as well as they need to have the team. So at the time, their team would be like their parents and their teachers, and they have to all kind of agree on this checklist to identify that this child has these characteristics. No one person can say like, oh, this child has autism. The psychologist would be the main person to lead that discussion, though, because they would be the expert in that area for that checklist.
Thank you so much. And so going from there, what would be your role as a speech and language therapist when a parent brings their child to say, I'm worried, because parents would always be worried when it gets to-
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Decided age and the child is not verbalizing, or the child is crying, or is not able to express himself. Oh, I saw.
So my role as a speech therapist, so once they get to me, if they are receiving early intervention therapy, I can also refer back. I can have them refer back to the entity that is providing these services to them, right? So in Los Angeles, it's the regional center, and they have a psychologist on staff. So I can refer them, I can make a note to their care coordinator and say, these are some characteristics I'm seeing. The parents are concerned as well. Can they be evaluated by the psychologist? Can also tell the parents to ask their physician, their primary care physician, for a referral as well to get evaluated for autism spectrum disorder, to get a diagnosis. But I myself alone cannot diagnose autism spectrum disorder, but I can speak to what characteristics I observe and also some language strategies that might work for the child.
Thank you so much for that. Yeah. I mean, I know that no one in the modern days, everything has to be through referrals, and children come to you through referrals, and you do your bit to pass it on to the next person. But in that process, it takes a long time to be able to diagnose just one thing. So how can parents help their children during this process?
Yeah, definitely early identification. If you have an idea that your child is behind, I think a lot of parents go through this parental guilt, right? They think, okay, well, my child's going to be okay. My child is normal. They don't want anything to be wrong with their child. So a lot of parents wait because they don't want anything to be wrong with their perfect child, right? So I think getting over the idea that of parental guilt and this ego of, I am a good parent, right? You can still be a great parent and have a child with autism. You can still be a great parent and have a child with any other disability. So it doesn't take away from you being a good parent. So I think early identification and reaching out, knowing where to reach out, right? So there needs to be some parent education on what to look for and also who to reach out to.
And so, I have a lot of questions that are coming from your explanations and your comments. When you say parents need to reach out, and how do they know where to go? And what are the top strategies that parents can start implementing with their young children to help with language development already? Or it's one thing to reach out, and it's another thing to actually do, take some practical steps at home. So what can parents do?
Absolutely. They can think about their primary care physician as their main referral source, right? Because the physician can reach knows what entities would be able to provide like early intervention services, that they should reach out to whatever company is in their area. But as far as early language development, I wrote a book called Play, Dem, and Sabotage. It's a book, it's a handbook I meant for parents and caregivers and educators to use. It's very conversational, that provides some simple functional strategies on how to develop language through vocal play, which, when I say vocal play, is to use the sounds that we are making and play with our child through sound. So, whether it be babbling, whether it be just making animal noises, vehicle noises, some kind of noises, right? So that the child can hear it and try to imitate that, all the way to doing sequencing of activities. So, what's going first? What's going next? What's going last? And there's so much information between those two. Like one of the big things I have parents do is offer choices to kids because they don't know vocabulary until they are introduced to it. So if I'm saying like, oh, what, you know, even if the child cannot speak, and I say, oh, let's get dressed. Do you want to wear the blue shirt or the green shirt? And I have the items placed about shoulder width apart so the child can see them at in two different visual fields, right? So they're not looking at one spot in the middle where you don't know where they're looking, but they're looking at two different places. So if they make a decision, even if they know they cannot speak, they might look towards one of the colors and you say, oh, great, let's wear that blue shirt today. You know, provide that language that the child isn't able to use yet, but you're modeling it for them.
It's brilliant, amazing. I mean, you give a child choices, and it improves the vocabulary in the first instance, because you are like giving them the option of yellow, blue, green, red, so they know, okay, this is when they see green, they can recognize green, and they say, oh, mommy, that's color green. Oh, maybe they see a red car passing. Oh, mommy, I like that red car. Things like that, you know, those things actually help. What parents don't have time to spend with their kids, they just turn on a TV and leave them playing or watching one of these children's programs. And I think that's one of those things that actually caused a lot of children to have speech and language defects, because parents don't have the time to interact with the kids as much as our parents did. Like, I know back in the days, my parents would be there. They would guide you through things, like you said. So going back to that book now, you talked about Play, Dumb, and Sabotage. What was the inspiration behind writing the book?
So I wanted to create a greater impact, right, on speech therapy. I knew that I could impact the parents and children that I was working with directly, but there were so many children I had to not work with because my caseload was too high, or working in early intervention, you travel from house to house to house. So if a child is a few miles away, even in Los Angeles, that's 20, 30 minutes of driving. So you're not always able to add every child that you want onto your caseload. But I wanted to be able to reach every child if possible. And so I thought a book would be a great way to be able to duplicate the information that I have and allow parents and caregivers and other educators, new speech therapists, speech therapy assistants on how to use these strategies in a very functional way. And it's explained in a very conversational tone where it's not a lot of technical jargon. You know, there's examples at the end of every chapter, there is like practice work to do as well. So one of the things that I say is don't ask a yes, no question unless you are ready to honor that no, right? Because oftentimes we ask kids, can you say this or can you do that? Or are you ready to clean up? Are you ready to have dinner? And those are yes, no questions where if they said no, most parents would be like, oh, okay, we're going to do it anyway. That's not really, they didn't really mean to ask a yes, no question. It was more like, this is what we're going to do now, right? So like with my son, even he's going to be 12, but he still wants to watch TV or something. And I'm like, okay, well, it's about time to get ready for bed. Do you want to brush your teeth first or change into pajamas first? Or say, hey, we have to cut your nails. Do you want to do it today or tomorrow? So I give him a choice. So it's not like, hey, do you want to cut your nails today?
Forcing anything on them. It feels like you are giving them choices, but you are giving them choices within your own allowed spaces.
Yes, it's very structured choices, right? Because they're going to have to do whatever I would like them to do, but they get the choice of which one, when are they going to do it, right? So what order they're going to do it. And then for kids with articulation, a lot of people will say, oh, can you say caterpillar? And then kids are like, no. But if I say, oh, caterpillar, your turn, or you say it. So I'm not giving them a choice per se, but I'm giving them a direction. So I'm saying something and then I'm going to have them say it. So it's your turn to say it, right? So it's like, oh, the cat ate a, what do cats eat? Like, you know, the cat ate out of the orange bowl. So and then I say, oh, your turn, you say it.
That's brilliant. And why the choice of the title, Play Dumb and Sabotage?
Yeah, so the subtitle is Mindfully Under-Anticipate a Child's Needs and Create Opportunities to Practice Language. And so Play Dumb is falling back into that whole concept of we over-anticipate what a child needs. And the term helicopter parents are, you know, we observe and provide something that the child might need at that time rather than let that child be the communicative partner and ask for it or indicate that there is a need, right? So playing dumb is anticipating, knowing what they want, but observing and playing dumb. An example could be anything from a child saying, juice. And you go, I like to drink juice. Juice is great. And like, juice. Oh, yeah, I love orange juice. And they go, oh, did you? And then I might ask them, oh, did you want juice? And they go, yeah. Oh, juice, please. I want juice, please. So they're playing dumb, like, you know what they want. They obviously want juice, right? But you play dumb, provide this communication where it's very functional, right? I'm not saying like, oh, okay, well, juice and tell me that you want juice. I'm playing dumb, like, oh, wait, yeah, I love to drink juice. And to help to promote them to use their language. And if they're not able to, then I can model it for them. And hopefully the next time the interaction happens, they can do it correctly. Like another example would be to have a toy a child loves, but have it out of reach, but in sight. So they can indicate that they need it or that they want it. During snack time, I might give a child a couple pieces of the snack rather than the whole bowl, right? So they can have opportunities. The sabotage part is have it the little bit, and then you have all of the rest of the snack somewhere else that the child can see. So the sabotage is just giving a little bit at a time. The sabotage is the repetition of that practice, that language practice. The sabotage is having the toy in sight but out of reach. So you want to be able to have the child practice in a very functional way because repetition is so important, right? Just like anything like athletics, if you're going to make a free throw shot, you can't just make a free throw shot or practice it once in a while. You need to practice it consistently.
I love the ideas and all these little bits that you've actually given us. It's like we got a glimpse into what the book is all about. But where can listeners find the book? And do you have social media handle where people can reach you if they need to?
Absolutely. So they can go to my website. It's playdumbandsabotage.com. And there's a link for my book in there as well. They could also follow me on Instagram. My Instagram handle is Play Dumb and Sabotage. And my personal Instagram is JT808.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you so much. And it's been an amazing discussion with you. And we hope to come back to you some more in the future. This podcast will be broadcast on all podcast platforms. Please subscribe and share with your friends and family. And don't forget to leave a review, comment, or feedback. Thank you so much for your time today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
A big thank you to all our listeners who have been sending us messages through the message link. I would like to thank everyone who has listened in so far and contributed to this podcast. Thank you so much. We couldn't have done anything without you. Keep listening, keep sharing, keep downloading, and keep liking. Thank you again.
Six months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tantandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.